May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be ever acceptable to you, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. So to start off this morning, I have a question of all of us here that might be a sensitive question. But how many of us, by a show of hands, have ever experienced the unexpected death of a loved one? That's most of us. Now, death is a pretty universal experience. If I had asked how many of us have experienced the death of a loved one, I'm sure everyone would have raised their hands. But there's something about an unexpected death, which is particularly painful, and something that I would like us, if we can, to try to hold in our hearts this morning, particularly if you know it, to remember what it was like when that event occurred. I remember what it felt like for me when my grandmother died very, very unexpectedly about 2 years ago. She had a very rare disease that was not diagnosed until way too late. And when she died, it was very sudden, unexpected. And I felt sad, certainly. I felt a little angry at times. But mostly, I felt shocked, completely in shock, confused. I was trying to piece together what had just happened. And you may know what that feeling is like for yourself. These two disciples in tonight's gospel are feeling the same way. We're a few weeks away from Easter Day, but we have to remember this gospel passage is set on Easter Day. These two disciples have just witnessed the horrible torture and death of their friend, their mentor, their teacher. Very unexpectedly, after the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem, there was a complete turnabout. The crowds crucified him. And these disciples are shocked. They're trying to piece together everything that has just happened. They're trying to make sense of Jesus' death in light of Jesus' teachings, his prophecies. They're trying to make sense of the news that the women have told him, that he's alive, that they've seen an angel to confirm this, that the tomb is empty. They're trying to figure out who is this Jesus, this Messiah, whom they've been following. They're full of questions. And when they're walking along, talking to each other about all of these things, that word in Greek that we translate as talking or discussing with each other is not just shooting the breeze. It means to turn over or to examine evidence. That's what happens when we're in shock. We sort of process and process and process evidence, trying to put together a reality. Because when we are shocked, when we're traumatized by an unexpected tragedy, like the death of a loved one, our reality is shattered. And we try to piece it back together by turning over evidence. Human beings are interesting creatures because we don't live in an objective reality. We live in a subjective reality of our own perceptions, our own understandings. And there's a little bit of lag time between what actually happens and our understanding of it, and that's at the best of times. But when we are traumatized, when we experience an unexpected tragedy, we can get stuck. We can get stuck processing all of these pieces, dwelling on our old hopes, our old dreams, our old expectations of how life should have been unfolding. All the while, objective reality has completely changed all around us. And that's these disciples here. One of them says, you know, we were hoping that he was the one to redeem Israel. And that verb, we were hoping, an imperfect tense, has a sort of timelessness about it. It stretches all the way back to what they had been hoping. But all the way into the future, into the present, are we still hoping? Can we still hope after everything that we've encountered that he is the one to redeem Israel? What does hope look like in the context of all this grief? It's in that place, this place of uncertainty, of confusion, of utter shock, that Jesus comes into their midst and walks with them, and they don't recognize him. How many times has that happened to me, certainly, that I am completely oblivious to the presence of God in my life, that God is somehow working right there in front of me, and because I am so inwardly focused on my own heart or on my own head, on trying to process, that I am blind to God before me. I see some nods, so this is something other people know as well. When that happens, when God is with us, trying to work on us, and we don't recognize God, how do we come to recognize? How do we come to open our eyes? Well, if you think about it, it's because something familiar breaks into our reality and reorients our attention and helps reframe what is happening. That's what happens with these two disciples. Yes, Jesus comes and walks with them and illuminates the scriptures for them, but really the breakthrough, the moment when they recognize that God is in their presence, is when something familiar happens. Something that Jesus had just done 3 or 4 days prior at the Last Supper. He took bread, he blessed it, he broke it, and he gave it to them. And it was in that action, in that fourfold action of taking, blessing, breaking, and sharing, the disciples recognized that Jesus was there in their midst. That he was alive, that he continued to abide with them. This is how we get unstuck, when we get into those places where after a trauma, we are processing and processing and processing. It's kind of like one of those computer programs that freezes, right? And the little icon is spinning and spinning and spinning. How do we get out of that? There is an event, something familiar, which breaks into our reality and gives us the reassurance that everything that came before is tied to the new reality that is unfolding in front of us, that there is a path forward out of this place of stuckness. This is what happened for me in the events surrounding my grandmother. I should say, every Easter, my grandmother would make these peanut butter eggs, these chocolate peanut butter eggs for all of her grandchildren. And these were not normal chocolate peanut butter eggs. She took peanut butter and she whipped in sugar or syrup, so it was very light and velvety, and then she would dip them in chocolate ganache, dark chocolate ganache, and they glistened. And they weren't small either. They were big as your fist. They were huge. And they were so rich. You couldn't just eat it. You had to take a knife and take a little slice off and nibble on it. And one egg would last you a whole week. Now here's the thing. I don't like peanut butter. I can't stand peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I just don't eat it. David can attest to this. But these peanut butter eggs were something special to me, and I always looked forward to peanut butter eggs at Easter. My grandmother's peanut butter eggs. And I told you, my grandmother died 2 years ago. She died at the end of Lent in 2015, very unexpectedly. And the next week, Holy Week, was just shock for me and my entire family. But then Easter rolled around, and in my grandparents' house, unexpectedly, there were peanut butter eggs, arrayed on a little platter with the fake green grass under them. And I don't know if she made them ahead of time, which she does, or if someone else made them, but there they were, peanut butter eggs. And in my shock, in my utter confusion, trying to piece together my reality, being stuck inside of my own head, these eggs were a wonderful reassurance that the spirit of my grandmother is always going to be with me. Always. Always. And that there actually was a path forward from this place of unexpected grief, unexpected shock, a path forward to new life. Now, I don't want to compare chocolate peanut butter eggs to communion, but it is what I'm doing, right? The breaking of the bread was chocolate peanut butter eggs for these disciples. They were so reassured, felt so comforted by Jesus at the Last Supper, at this intimate meal, that when it happened again, they recognized, they got unstuck, and they recognized that Jesus was continued to be with them. That's the type of wonderful grace that happens with communion, with Holy Eucharist. It's why the church does Holy Eucharist, at least at this church, every single Sunday. The Last Supper and the Emmaus dinner were so foundational for the disciples and for the early church. In this sacrament was the utter reassurance that Jesus is with us through all of the traumas that we experience in life in this world. We need a constant reminder that Jesus is with us through it all. And that is why we come to this table. But more so, it's not just a reassurance, right? It's also a little jostling, a spur to try to jostle us out of our stuck places. And my friends, all of us here, in some way, in some capacity, in some small part of our life, we are all stuck. We're all stuck. It could be stuck about a big thing. We could be processing the grief of an unexpected death. It could be a small stuckness. I am procrastinating sending out thank you notes. I have no motivation to get them out for some reason. But that's a stuckness for me. And like that little computer program that's frozen, my icon is spinning and spinning and spinning, and I'm stuck. And truth be told, it's not just being stuck. Stuck is not a good place to be, but it's a bad place to be because it is really a place of death. It is a place where we cannot move forward. The psalmist says at times, we are entangled in the cords of death. We are in the grip of the grave. And that can be a literal grave, a big grave, or it could be a metaphoric grave, a metaphoric death. But there's some aspect of all of our lives in which we are entrapped, stuck, processing perpetually, and unable to move forward to new life. You have an opportunity today to get unstuck, to get new life. In whatever way you are stuck today, I'm going to invite you to lift that up in prayer and say, Jesus, I am stuck in this way. Help me. Help me get unstuck out of these cords of death, whatever they are, into new life. And then, when you come forward to this altar rail and receive the bread of life, my hope is that not only that you will become unstuck, but that like the other disciples, you'll be able to go home and tell your friends and your family of all the wonderful ways in which you're actually moving forward and have new life. The next verse of that psalm says, when you get into these places of stuckness, entrapped in the cords of death, in the grip of the grave, call upon the name of your Lord and say, O Lord, I pray to you, save my life. This is the bread of life. Be fed here and be saved.